You were both in Skull and Bones, the secret society.
It's so secret we can't talk about it.
What does that mean for America?
It's so secret we can't talk about it.
What does that mean for America?
I've got a vision for what I want to do for the country. See, I know exactly where I want to lead. It's so secret we can't talk about it.
What does that mean for America?
I've got a vision for what I want to do for the country. See, I know exactly where I want to lead. It's so secret we can't talk about it.
What does that mean for America?
I've got a vision for what I want to do for the country. See, I know exactly where I want to lead.
You were both in Skull and Bones, the secret society.
Good morning and welcome to the Friday, November 20th, 2009 edition of the Investigative Journal. I'm your host, Greg Szymanski. You're listening to LibertyRadioLive.com. And today is Friday, and my show is airs every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Central, and then repeat broadcasts in the afternoon and evening on LibertyRadioLive.com. And Friday, sometimes I like to recap some stories that I've covered in the past, some things we talked about during the week that some loose ends have been left open. So I've kind of divided it into three or four areas today. One, I want to talk about three different cases. First, the Elsbeth Baumgardner case. Second, Don Harkins passed away recently. He was the editor of the Idaho Observer, a story that I've neglected on this show, and he was a good friend of mine. I want to just update that story, as well as the Tony Alamo ministry story. Tony is now sitting in jail, sentenced for the rest of his life, 175 years. He had been put there on a frame job. And we've showed that in the show, how they've tried, the government has tried to bring this ministry down for the last 30 years. He's got a new message that he just sent everybody from his jail cell, and I thought I'd read that. But let's go back to the beginning before I get into these three stories. And then finally, I want to recap a story that I wrote earlier and present my evidence, which should, beyond a reasonable doubt, show you that George Washington was in the pocket of the Jesuits. And I want to just recap that with my final statements about it. And I think if you're a reasonable person, if you were sitting on the a jury of your peers and I had a chance to present this case, I think I could easily win it. Because there's just so much, and that's not easy, because I'll tell you what, when you try to find information, if I had all the information available that was available back then, or all the information that the Jesuits have covered up, it would be a slam dunk case. But with what little pieces we have, I think there's enough to show you what I was talking about. But anyway, and that story has more importance than you think, because it really does change our view on American history. And it has no intention to at all denigrate Protestants, because there are many, many good Protestants behind the formation of this country, many, many people. And those are the important ones, not the elites that were controlling things from the top back then, just like they are now. But anyway, let me get back to Elsbeth Baumgardner. Now, on this show, I presented how she was sent to, she was an attorney from Ohio. Who found out about corruption there that went deep into the Bush administration. And it went deeper than the powers that be wanted it to go. So basically, Elsa spoke out at a city council meeting, and they twisted a law, and her legal problems began. Before it was over, she was charged with trying to intimidate a judge, which was complete lunacy when you look at the case. She was basically convicted for speaking out openly at a public city council meeting, and then she was also convicted for having a website. And the particulars of that you can get on my website at Arctic Beacon, but she was sentenced to, I believe, 5 to 8 years in federal prison, and sits there as we speak. She's in her mid-50s with a family from Ohio, and her husband runs a pharmacy there. And I'm going to try to get him on. His name's Joe. And I'm going to try to get Joe on next week to update the story and perhaps open up some line of communication with Elsa so that we can continue to follow her stories, the Don Harkin story. this came to about a week ago, came as such a surprise to me. Don, he's an editor of the Idaho Observer, and many of you may know him, may not. He passed away about a month ago. I didn't hear about it for about 3 weeks after he died, and that just goes to show you when you get involved in certain stories how some of your friends can just get lost, and that's exactly what happened. I feel bad about it, but I was very sad when I heard, since I've spoken to his wife, Ingrid, and she believes there's some foul play there. Now, I've known Don for years. We were friends. I spent time in Idaho with him, and I want to update that story, the strange way he passed away about a month ago, as well as talk with Ingrid. Ingrid runs Vaccination Liberation. She was a guest, and Don were a guest on my show many, many times. And she is going to come in next week and talk about the evils of the vaccinations. And she runs an organization for years trying to help mothers and people and families to understand the problems with vaccinations, even way before the swine flu thing hit. So when they started to run a campaign against the swine flu vaccinations, who knows what happened with Don, but it's such a strange story how he died, how quick they called. It happened in a month. And they called it acute leukemia. It's a very strange story. I'm going to let Ingrid explain it next week, and she'll be on one day the following week. Now back to the third story I wanted to update from the files of the Investigative Journal, and that's the Pastor Tony Alamo story in the Alamo Ministries. Now, it's no secret that the government has had an axe to grind with this ministry for over 30 years, and it's no secret that they've tried probably everything under the sun to nail Tony in whatever arena they could. Here you have a pastor who was financially successful with his ministry to help people, and I'll tell you what, he does. They needed to put an end to this because he was talking out openly against the Vatican, against the Vatican's connections to our government, to Bill Clinton and the state that one of Tony's ministries was in, Arkansas. And this just couldn't go on from the point of view of the beat. Now, we documented in the 70s, 80s, 90s how the government tried everything under the sun, like I said, to bring this ministry to its knees. And in a sense, failed. The only thing they ever did was put Tony away for 4 years for a bogus tax charge in the 90s. And this was explained by former FBI agent John Peeler, who's been on my show, to talk about how he was enlisted to to bring down this ministry and to find anything they could, put guns in the ministry, do anything, drugs, the whole shot. And bring them down. So why do you think they people now, so they wait till 2008 and do it again? This time they did it with they said that Tony violated the Mann Act, which is taking children across state lines for illicit purposes. When you look at the case, by the way, today's a day for me that I don't know if I look forward to it or I don't, but after going to law school for years, I decided never to take the bar right after I graduated for some reason. And I don't want to get into those reasons, but I finally decided to do this about 6 months ago. So I sat for the bar exam about 6 months ago, and the results come out today. So, people say, well, you must be nervous. No, I'm not nervous. Whether I pass or I fail, both I will use to an advantage. And although, you never like to fail at anything, God always has a reason for it. So today at 6 o'clock, I'll find out whether I passed or failed the California bar exam. And then at that point, I'll decide what I'll do with that. If I fail, I'll decide if I take the exam again. And I've had a good friend of mine, and I'll leave his name off the air, who's taken it nine times. And I'm praying right now that he passes because he's a very close friend that I've known for a long, long time. And I just really would rather see him pass than me today. He deserves it. And it's not an easy exam. Some people pass it like that. Others take forever. I remember reading a story about a girl who took it 13 times. I know a man who took it 25 times. I also know a man who I went to school with. And I'm just doing this as an aside. It's Friday. Man I went to school with His name was Harry, and he went to school, to law school, when he was started when he was 84. And he went because he was bored, and he wanted to, he was a physicist, retired, and he wanted to spend some time with his daughter who was going to law school. So they went together, and I was tutored by Harry. What a brilliant man. And I don't think I would have made it through school without him in the first year. And Harry since passed away, but he passed on the first time. And it was the oldest guy ever to graduate from a California law school. Great story. But anyway, back to what I'm talking about. So in a legal sense, I've looked at this Alamo case, and people who, on both sides of the issue asked me, and I said, you know, not besides my interests in the people there and my friendships with them over the years that I've become acquainted with them, looking at this from a legal standpoint, it's a travesty. I cannot understand, you know, I understand how the system works, how they framed him with all the evidence and all the concocted evidence from some of the witnesses who have testified against him. You know, to see this man sit there for the rest of his life, to me, I'll always defend him. And if I was his lawyer or just his lawyer speaking as on a radio broadcast, I have no qualms in saying that for the rest of my life, because I've watched this case probably closer than most for the last 2 or 3 years. And I feel there's an innocent man sitting behind jail because of his views, because of his ministry, because of some of the controversial things he does. And I believe that the powers that be have put him there for that reason, to end this ministry. Now, to add injury to insult, they decided this time to get Child Protective Services in Arkansas, those hound dogs, those wolves on this ministry, and they've still got in custody 35 children, and there's not been any shred of abuse shown. All the federal court, when they denied the federal injunction to stop this action at the state level, all they could say was that it looks like the children could be in danger. Well, you know, that's not good enough. And when we looked at all the evidence and all the people that we could get on the show before a gag order was placed, and I can't get people on the show anymore because they can't speak or they'll be in jail, and a couple people that did speak on my show were put in jail, not specifically for speaking on the show, but for speaking out against about the case, and some of the parents of the ministry spent time in jail. So there's nobody to really talk to anymore, and I just wanted to mention that if you look into the archives of my show of Liberty Radio, you'll find many, many stories about this. And as we speak, this week the federal courts denied the injunction to release those children, and said the state acted within the bounds of the law, whatever the hell that means. And that's where we're at with the Alamo ministry story. Now, will I keep covering it in the future? Of course. And will we keep trying to get people to get on here and talk about the abuses of Child Protective Services all over the country like we've done in the past? Of course. But in the meantime, let's look at what I've heard about what's happening to Tony, because I asked, where is he now? And they say he's still in the same Arkansas dungeon there. But they say he's an unbelievable spirit. And they say he's as strong as ever, giving his, you know, ministry and the people that he's known his whole life, the encouragement to go on. And he's writing more from his jail cell, perhaps, than he was before he was there. And I know I've got a letter from a guy who was right next to him in his jail cell. And I'll try to find that and read that. I don't have it right in front of me. And he said that Tony's been a very, very uplifting person in his life and wanted to tell people that Tony's been helping him while he's in jail. And this goes probably, I asked Tony last time, what'd you do when you were in jail for 4 years, last in the 90s? And he said, I just tried to spread the message of God and save it, you know, and help as many people as I could. And he was as uplifting now as he was back then. And I've got a message that was sent to me that he had written, and I thought I'd share it with you at this point. And this is something that he wrote yesterday. And he says, and remember, just think about it. Put yourself in the same shoes. You're facing a life sentence, and you know you've been framed. And it'd be pretty easy just to curl up in your jail cell and just wither away. But he's just completely the opposite from the words I get from his the people around him, some of his friends in California that contact me by email. And they sent me this just to show what he's thinking about now. And let me read this. I haven't read it before, but I will read it to you. One thing I'd like to say, says Tony from his jail cell, is that when people are praying, they have to remember that the Lord is very tender, and he's the kind of God that sometimes leaves the 90 and 9 and looks for the one little lamb that was lost. He's saying, ask and you shall receive. He wants to give us what we're asking for far more than we want to get it. He says, ask and you shall absolutely receive. Ask and you shall receive. Seek and you will find. Knock and it shall be open. He's extremely merciful. He wants to answer our prayers. That's why he keeps emphasizing us to pray. More than anything, he wants to bless his children and lead us. He led all of those people out of Egypt, and he's really so caring that all he wants us to do is call on him. He hears us when we cry. He knows, he feels all the pain that you feel, and he knows how you feel. He doesn't like for the little children to be taken away, and he doesn't want our property taken away. He doesn't want Satan to take any of our property away. He wants to restore us. So when you realize that the Lord really, I mean really loves you, then you know that he's listening to every murmur of your heart. He knows everyone. He knows everyone of your thoughts. He knows everything that you're thinking, and for sure everything you're asking him. But he wants people to ask in faith, believing. He even instructs people what to do. Deliver us from evil. Deliver us from our enemies. And he shows all throughout the scriptures. He shows us all throughout the scriptures how he delivers his people from their enemies. So that's what we have to keep our mind on, that he really loves you and cares for you. He loves you more than you ever thought. It's past your understanding, beyond really any man's understanding. He's the God that created the universe. He's the perfect God. He cannot lie. And when he says all those things, how much he really cares for you, try to believe it. He's not a liar. The devil, or Satan, or Lucifer, these are liars. The devil wants you to believe that the Lord doesn't care for you. But he cares more than you know. He hears when you cry, and he wants you to have faith, though behind the tears. He knows when you feel pain. He wants you to have faith over and over. What's that? I have a caller? I'm still there. Okay. He knows when you feel pain. Let me check to make sure I'm still. So, he wants you to have faith over. So he can deliver you from. He's the master of the entire universe. And he concentrates on us more than he does the stars, the sun, and the moon. So we have to really believe him when we're praying and believe that he loves you. Otherwise, how could you possibly think and he can give you so much mighty deliverance? It's like when you see him with a little lamb in his arms, and when you see him with the babies in his lap, and when you see him with the little children, and he just loves them. He wants people to be friendly with him because he used to go out to dinner parties and stuff with sinners because he loves to talk to humans and loves to communicate with them. And he loves human beings. He wants to wipe every tear from you, and he wants to deliver you. You should be happy that this God is so fabulous, so loving, so caring. When you're in there at nighttime, and usually... And, well, let me just say Tony's words. When you're in there at nighttime and you're feeling pain, he feels the pain even more than you do. Don't forget, he's the one that had the spikes drilled into his hands and his feet. He knows what pain is like, and he doesn't want you to have it. So he wants you to call out to him. He loves to communicate with people. That's why he sat with publicans and sinners at dinners and dinner parties and talked to people and explained the scriptures to them. And when people would come up to him, even people that were not saved, and asked him for healing, he loves his creation so much that he instantly healed them. All those lepers, and a bunch of them didn't even thank him. And neither did the people thank him when he destroyed the Pharaoh. Pharaoh was laying down laying face down in the Red Sea, down at the bottom of it, and the people were on dry land. He loves his people, especially his people that are doing work for him and are praying to him, and especially those that are in trouble. Everyone just needs to lay it on the line with him and say, Father, we love you too, and we want to show it by trusting you and believing in you. And he loves it when people trust him enough to ask him. But if you don't even ask, he says, don't expect anything, because I want you to visit with me. So do it, okay? And tell everybody else to do it. You've got to believe that he loves you, because he does. Otherwise, he wouldn't have said it. Now, when Satan tells you he loves you, you know he's a dirty, rotten liar. But not Jesus. Jesus really does love you so much that he created you and instructs you how to talk to him and tells you all the promises where he says, I am the Lord thy God that healeth thee. Right. I deliver you. I have an open ear to listen to you. I want to hear from you. I want you to love me at least a little bit as much as I love you. The more you love him, the more he loves you back. But he loves you beyond what you really ever will be able to understand or think about. He feeds you. He clothes you. And he houses you. He's just waiting. Otherwise, we wouldn't be in the bind that we're in. It's because people haven't come to him enough. There's not enough people talking to him, and so he's doing this, not because he's mean. He wants to hear from us, and he's not hearing from us, okay? People say, well, then he doesn't love us. You're just saying what the devil is telling you to say. Why do you think he says, come unto me, all ye that are heavy laden, all of you that have problems, and I'll give you rest from your problems. Come on, come unto me. He's not Santa Claus. But you see, some people are scared of Santa Claus or the Easter Bunny. They say, come on and sit on my lap, kids. No, you know. But Jesus isn't saying that. You don't have to be afraid of him. He knows where you're at. If he didn't love you, you still wouldn't be alive, okay? And those words are from Tony. And I've got a message here from somebody. You're on. Okay. One of my listeners, am I still on here? I think I'm still on. Okay. I'm always wondering about this Skype, but I guess I'm still on. I've had
Hello?
Some trouble.
Hello?
Yeah, I got caller?
Yeah.
Well, listen, we got about a minute before the break, but go ahead, and then you can come on right after the break. I'm sorry, I just had to finish that message. Go ahead. Who's calling?
I'm Dana Minaberrier. I'm the mother of Miriam Krantz. The grandmother of the six Krantz grandchildren that were taken.
Okay.
Anyway,
tell me what's on your mind.
Well, I believe that this whole thing is a scam. It's the injustice that has been done to my daughter and her children is unbelievable. The fact that the government can come in and take children away from their parents without any legal right or reason. They never charged my daughter or her husband with anything, and yet they came in and took all my grandchildren away, claiming that there might be dangers later on in their life. Now, that's just, to me, so absurd. They've been examined for sexual abuse three times. Now, the only time they ever had any abuse done to them sexually were by the doctors who examined them. I don't know if this, you know, you understand what happens to a little girl when they're examined, but it's disgusting. And now my granddaughters have been abused, but by DHS.
You know something? We're going to go into a break. What I want you to do is when we come back in 3 minutes, this was a very quick message. I want you to tell basically our listeners a little bit of background of the story. Explain your position, and then we'll move forward in the next half hour, okay?
Okay.
Okay, and we're going to look forward to this in the next half hour to emphasize the fact that these children from the Alamo Ministry have literally been kidnapped by the state,
yes,
taken for no good reason, and this grandmother of six children is going to tell you why back in 3 minutes.
long to hear, I need to see, cause I shed tears to let him go.
Fight the fight. We are here to equip you. Because you love the truth, LibertyRadioLive.com.
Now listen to me. The Bible says, render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. I want you to know that a corporation is Caesar.
Government takeover of the church. This DVD is the most powerful tool we have for waking up those asleep in the pews. The scripture calls for his people to come out of her. The corporate church is the apostate church, the whore that rides the beast. Make copies and give them away to your corporate church friends and loved ones. The truth will make them free. They will watch the DVD, Government Takeover of the Church. Who will tell them if not you?
Get this DVD for a donation of $25 from LibertyRadioLive.com. Order online today or call 559-781-3773.
Now listen to me.
The program you are listening to is 100% sponsored by you, the listener, on this First Amendment Rights Media channel. You will notice that there are few commercials on this radio network. There's a good reason for that. Corporate advertising dollars come with strings that limit program content. So without your help, these programs cannot continue on satellite, internet, or our several affiliates. If you benefit by the educational law programs, we ask you to give. If you are admonished or nurtured by the Bible and ministry programs, we ask you to give. If some voice a cause that you are passionate about, we ask you to give. If you believe in any of these, we ask you to support them as you would a missionary on a continual basis, as if giving a tithe for missionary radio. These programs are not commercially viable and must be supported by those faithful to the cause of truth. Look for the button to sponsor your favorite programs at our listen and schedule pages on the internet. Then, when you subscribe, we will send you the last quarterly MP3 CD of that program immediately, and continue to do so with each new quarter. We will also give you unlimited archive access to all of our programs. We're asking you to give much less than a tithe, so that you may also send support directly to a particular program host, cause, and anywhere else the Spirit may lead you. Do all to the glory of our God and Creator, for His holy nation, the only kingdom that will last forever. Thank you for listening.
We're back on the investigative journal, and my caller is the grandmother of six children who basically have been kidnapped by the state from the Tony Alamo ministry. Please introduce yourself again for those who missed that last couple minutes and update this story. Tell us really from your eyes what has happened, and please don't leave anything out. We have a full half hour. Go ahead.
Well, my name is Dana Minaberrier, and like you said, I am the mother of Miriam Krantz and the grandmother of the six Krantz children, Lily, Annabelle, Ava, Susanna, Corey, and Rosie. And they age from 13 to, Rosie's about 2 now. It's very sad. I heard that they were kidnapped on November 18th. My daughter in Florida called me. She saw it on the internet. And, so I immediately, my son and I started calling from Oklahoma to find out what was going on and tried to talk to the police in Falk, in Texarkana, got nowhere there, got a hold of DHS. They told me they had no idea of what was going on. Talked to the mayor. Nobody could give me any information. So my son and I drove down. Took us 6 hours to get here. And on the 19th, I walked into the DHS office.
This was in 2008, by the way. Go ahead.
Right, right.
Okay.
It's been over a year. I walked into the DHS office, and Steve Mason is the department head there. Anyway, I talked to him, and I talked to him on the phone the day before and told him who I was, and he invited me into his office and said that he had no knowledge of my grandchildren. But when I got into his office, there were six of my grandchildren's bags on his floor with their names on them. And this was after he had already denied any knowledge of my grandkids. So I called him a liar, and he immediately rushed me out of his office and had me wait in a room until Aquanette White and Kay Smallwood, who were also DHS workers, talked to me. And I asked them right then and there that I wanted custody of my grandchildren, which as a grandparent, I had that right. And they told me I could go to court and ask for my grandkids in a week. So I came back down, and they gave me the wrong courthouse to go to, and they never even told the judge that I was requesting guardianship of my grandkids. So I never got to see the judge, and I've been fighting for a year now trying to get custody of my grandchildren, and they won't let me have them. And what they want to do is sell my grandchildren to the highest bidder. They've become apparent flesh peddlers, as far as I'm concerned. And they want to take all the children because they don't care what the parents do or say. If the parents don't bow down and kiss their feet, then they'll never see their kids again.
Okay, this is one thing I want to make clear, and I want you to comment on this. They used a feeble excuse that there was abuse going on with these children at the Alamo Ministry. From your perspective, tell us why this is so false, so absurd. Go ahead.
Well, I know for a fact that there hasn't been the abuse that they allege. None of that's ever been proven. And also, they lumped up all the children into one group from what one or two or five kids say. They've judged the whole group of people over what just a few kids have said, which is unconstitutional. None of them have ever had the right to stand up and defend themselves individually. My grandchildren have never been abused in any way, shape, or form. They've never been even touched by another man. That's why it's so sickening what DHS has done to them now. My daughter's never been charged with any criminal, or my son-in-law. They've never been charged with anything at all. And yet DHS comes in and just snatches their kids. And now they're intent on trying to sell them. So it's
tell
very
us where
clear.
These children are right now.
Where are they? We're not allowed to know where they are.
Oh, wow.
And I've seen my grandchildren since they've been taken, and they've told me, like, they take all their clothes away from them, all their toys for their birthdays and Christmases. All their toys are snatched as soon as they get back to wherever they're at. My granddaughter, Susanna, complained that her birthday was in August, and we got her a lot of presents. And as soon as she got back to where she was, they took them all away from her. And she's never been allowed to play with any of them. My other granddaughter just had her birthday a week ago, and she had all of her toys. Any clothes that my daughter and my son-in-law send, they're taken away, and they're made to wear rags to school to make them look like they've got terrible, parents and these poor, pitiful children. You know, they're so neglected. Well, my granddaughter Lily got an award for how smart she is. And this they claim she, you know, that my grandchildren have been neglected in their education and neglected medically and physically. And It just, it's all lies. Every single one of them are lies. I know the school that the church had. It wasn't, you know, homeschooling. It was a school, a private school. And,
Well, you as a grandmother, you know the situation that your grandchildren were in with your daughter and your son-in-law. Tell us about that, because it boils down to the state saying, listen, they were possibly in danger. We've showed on this show how that's completely ridiculous. And I want to hear from you about the situation. You knew where they were at. You knew about the ministry. And
yes.
Tell us about what you felt about their living situation prior to the state coming in.
Well, they had a beautiful home. All the latest, you know, appliances. They had more than enough food to eat. They were very well dressed. They were very good in their school. You know, the teachers were really good. Their curriculum was good. It was a BECA curriculum. They were taught values that God places on man. You know, they were taught never lie, steal, you know, be respectful to their elders, to obey their parents. Never did I see a child raise up its fist to another child, ever. They never raised their voices to their parents. They just were, you know, very well behaved and very polite, and they had a lot of respect toward one another, and you know, it was a community, you know, that everybody helped everybody if there was a need.
You know, and it appears to me that, for example, as a grandmother, you care and love your grandchildren, and you felt that they were living in a wholesome environment.
Completely.
Why do you think the state came in and did this? What is their motive from your perspective?
Well, they've been trying to destroy the church since the 60s, ever since Tony and Susie started talking about how corrupt things were in the government and in certain religions. And once that happened, then they came in and started claiming that, at first it was a lot of runaways were at the church, which wasn't true. That we had drugs or guns at the church, which wasn't true. This was back in Crescent Heights in the 60s. And the police would rather have seen everybody at the church out on the street, you know, robbing and taking drugs, than to be in a building worshiping God in one accord. Because back then, we had such a variety of different people. You had people that were with the Black Panthers, people that were, you know, in outlaw biker groups, and you had drug addicts, and you had musicians and teachers and doctors, and we all came in one accord and found Jesus Christ as our Savior, and we worked together. You know, all the prejudice that everybody had before they got saved, just it went away. And that was that just dumbfounded the police department and the government, how all these different groups of people could live together in one accord in harmony. And and how we went about telling people the truth, that, you know, Jesus Christ is the Son of the living God. God is real. You know, you don't have to do drugs. You don't have to kill your fellow man to make a point. You know, that just astounded the people. And so they did everything they could to destroy the church. And the more they persecuted the people, I myself was thrown in jail 3 times. For no reason, just because I was walking the streets and telling people about Jesus Christ. And
so as the 60s passed, we go into the 70s and 80s. What continued?
Well, then they started persecuting the church in Arkansas, up, you know, where the ridge was, the Georgia Ridge, and saying the same thing, that that there was guns and there was knives, and that Tony wasn't really a minister, he wasn't really a pastor, and you know, God ordained him, you know, just like God ordained the prophets of old. You know, you didn't have to have some piece of government paper to say that, you know, you were a minister of the God, of God, or a prophet of God, or a pastor, or anything else. You know, when God calls you, you answer. And it's just, people just don't believe that God is real. They just don't believe it. And, you know, more's the pity to them. You know, they're coming against God's people so hard. And I really feel sorry for these people, because they're ignorant. And they don't know what they're doing. And in the meantime, they're hurting all the innocent children.
Right, and so as the 70s passed, we see the same thing go on in the 80s and then in the 90s, and I documented that story through an FBI agent, who was John Peeler, who's talked openly about how he was told by his bosses to bring down this ministry in any way possible, using false allegations.
Right.
And so we see what happened in the 90s, and Tony spends 4 years in jail.
Well, they took John Peeler's son away and put him in prison under false charges, because John Peeler wouldn't obey the FBI. So his family assaulted by it. And they've done the same thing with anybody now who agrees with Tony or agrees with God, will not be able to have their grandchildren or their children back. The ones that have slammed the church and have slammed God and slammed the parents, they've gotten the grandkids. They've gotten the family members. But those of us who know the truth and who won't lie, will never, you know, we won't get our grandkids. We won't get our nieces and nephews back. No, they won't.
Yeah, let's get back to your personal story. Okay, so this goes on a year ago. Your grandchildren are taken away. Tell us some of the things that happened to your daughter and your son-in-law, and the family story behind this in the last year, what you guys have gone through, because it must be heartbreaking. Go ahead.
Well, my son's trying to get them also. My other daughter in Florida is trying to get them also, and we just keep getting hit with a brick wall. My daughter, Miriam, is beyond grief. She has a hard time even talking, because she just breaks down and cries. Her heart's broken. My son-in-law, of course, is not, you know, faring any better. They miss their children desperately, and their children miss them. My grandchildren are told by DHS and by these foster people that their parents don't love them, or else that they would obey DHS and the judge. And then they could have their kids back. So this just proves that, you know, they don't really love you, or they would do everything they can. You know, they would forsake God and their faith and do what we say, you know, which is a Pontius Pilate type attitude, you know, Jesuit type attitude. My daughter and her husband are making a stand for their rights, not only constitutionally, but their civil rights, their human rights, you know, to worship God and to serve God and to raise their family in the fear and admonition of the Lord. They've done nothing to deserve what's happened to them, nothing at all, and none of these parents have. I know these parents, I know all of them, and they're very loving and caring, and they would give you the shirt off their back. They help other people throughout the whole history of the ministry. Anything that anybody needed, whether it was medical bills, even strangers that come in off the street, they helped so many people in Falk. And now the whole community's turned against them. And they've helped people all over the world. In prison, it doesn't matter. Anybody, you know, calls and says, I need food, or I need clothing, or I need a bill paid, Tony was right there, boom. You know, people that needed hospitalization, needed surgery, Tony was there with the money. You know, they completely follow the Bible, and for that they're condemned. And it's just heartbreaking. My grandchildren are miserable. These other children are miserable. They cry for their parents all the time. They have nightmares now. The little boys are turning violent because they don't get to see their parents anymore. And you're not even allowed to talk about God. You can't bring the Bible. You can't sit and discuss personal things with your children anymore because DHS has got to be right there to listen and to censor anything you say.
Now, to the best of your knowledge, are all the grandchildren, your six grandchildren, together, or have they been split up?
They've all split up, yeah.
And during the last year, how many times have you had a chance to see them or communicate with them?
Once. Well, when I go to court, I get to see Lily, you know, wave at her, and the last time I got to hug her, I ran up to her real quick and gave her a big hug. And they didn't like that, you know, DHS did not like that. But they're very, the other kids in all these orphanages and stuff, they get to call their parents all the time. My grandchildren were complaining about that. You know, how come these other kids that are in these halls with us, they get to call their parents, but we don't get to? Now, that's not fair, Mommy. And, you know, they're always taking our stuff away from us, Mom. That's not fair. You know, and you know, they took all our clothes, Mom, and they're making us wear these rags. It's not fair, Mom. You know, why are they doing that to us, Mom? Why won't they let us go home, Mom? No, we don't believe what they're saying. You know, they say you don't love us, but we don't believe that, Mom. And these are terrible things. You know, what adult would go and tell a child that their parents hate them over and over and over again? You know, and then we ask, Miriam asked them, well, why can't all my kids be together? You know, well, we have to get them ready for adoption. Desensitize them. You know, make them, get them to the point where they don't even know each other anymore.
Just incredible. The question, you know, I wanted to ask you, here we have this federal court just ruled this week. They denied that injunction that would have stopped the state action. What's the next step? Is there any, is this being, I assume this is going to be appealed, right?
Yeah, it's really unfortunate that in the beginning, these people here were not represented by judicious lawyers. These lawyers were of the state and of the court. They did not care one bit about the children or the parents or upholding the Constitution. They, not one bit. They went. They did everything they could to damage the cases against these the parents. And as a result of that, since no lawyer. No lawyer appealed any of the comments made about their constitutional rights being violated.
They can't be brought up again, right.
Yeah, right, exactly. Right. And I think that's wrong. I think that they should be able to go and say, you know, we had bogus lawyers. They did not care one thing about us. You know, we didn't know the law. They should have known the law. We weren't represented correctly. And they should be able to do it over again, but that's not going to happen because there's not going to be anything fair going on in this state. Nothing. The judge is an unjust judge. He favors DHS. I'm almost inclined to think that he's part of this scam with CASA to adopt kids out. He must get a kickback or something. You know, I'll probably go to jail for all this, but I don't care. People need to know that Judge Griffin is an unjust judge, and he shouldn't be allowed be on the bench, and someday he's going to meet a higher judge, and he's going to be held accountable for all the damage he's done. You know, woe be unto him.
Well, just isolating it to your case, you know, you being the grandmother of these six kids, your daughter, Miriam, and your son-in-law situation, it's obvious.
They might have a chance still because their children never lived at the ranch house. You know, they stayed with their parents the whole time. They didn't go to school from the ranch house, but they didn't live in the sister's dorm, so to speak. That's what I call the sister's dorm. There's a good chance that their appeals might still be heard. We have a hearing again in January. Now, see, I left Oklahoma, and I left my job and my house, and I moved down here to Arkansas to try to get them again. So I've been here since August, and I've been to every hearing. And the judge does not care what I have to say. DHS doesn't care.
Well, the simple point here is that there's never been any abuse shown by association. Here we have six kids living away from the ministry. By association, they're being taken away for basically, even if they were at the ministry, there's no abuse going on there. And basically what's happening is the state is just holding their case on feeble, on such thin grounds that any reasonable person that would listen to this case would realize that, first of all, the children would be in a better position with their parents, considering their parents had a beautiful a home. Their education levels were high. There was never any abuse shown. And even if, they would be in better position with you, the family. And
right.
You can see the state in this case has just stepped in with an ulterior motive and destroying families. And my question to the listeners and what I want to say to the listeners is that this can happen to you as well anytime they want. For whatever you say, do, this government has taken control of our families, and we have to take a stand, and you guys have, and I applaud you for that. Go ahead. Any last words? We have a few, 3 minutes left.
Well, just that, people have got to start fighting back, or they're going to lose their families. Just like you said, it won't even matter. They can... a kid can come to school and a teacher can just say, oh, that child's got a bruise on them. There must be abuse going on. And boom, the kids are gone. While you're at work.
And that has happened. I've documented that happening in Florida numerous times.
Yeah. It can take a stranger. A stranger can call DHS and make a complaint against you and there not be any investigation done and your children are gone. Boom. And it's up to you to prove your innocence. And in this case here, they can't even prove guilt. I mean, the doctors and the nurses who have examined my daughters have even said that there's absolutely no proof whatsoever, but they're not allowed to say that before the judge. Their comments are not allowed in court. Only the DHS has the right to speak. And that is so bogus. We are told to shut up. We are told not to say a word. And these doctors and nurses who have witnessed that nothing has been done no longer have any control over my grandkids. The kids are sent to other doctors then. So that's why they've been examined so many times, because DHS wants a doctor that's going to agree with them. And
right.
The social workers who don't agree with what's going on are afraid to talk because they don't want to lose their job. But they have come up and said stuff to my daughter, but this is so sad, this is so terrible what's happened to you. This should never have happened, your kids should never have been taken away. Well, yeah, that's right, but come up and say that. Say it to the judge. And they're afraid to. People are afraid to step up for their rights. So shame on them.
Right. And I want to thank you for coming on and sharing this. We're about out of time. And we'll continue covering this story. And anytime you feel like calling, you let me know. Just call the station and we'll get you on. And
well,
keep us up.
I got interviewed by Lynn LaRoe.
Yeah.
And I warned her that...
next time. All out of time.
All right.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Bye. Lord bless.